Thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, September 4th, 2014.
Once a ZANU-PF cadre is being victimized politically, we are not going to sit back and relax. That's destroying our party. Whether they are destroying from within or outside, we will not sit back and relax.
Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Among our top stories this evening:
police block a ZANU-PF youth protest against corruption and alleged victimization of party members who are either officials or students at the Belvedere Technical Teachers College in Harare.
Once a ZANU-PF cadre is being victimized politically, we are not going to sit back and relax. That's destroying our party. Whether they are destroying from within or outside, we will not sit back and relax.
Pressure is mounting on President Robert Mugabe and his cabinet to release details and benefits from his recent trip to China.
There's nothing wrong in having bilateral relations with China, but there is everything wrong to try to raise people's hopes on a false assumption that China is going to rescue this country.
And analysts are skeptical the truce agreed to between two warring ZANU-PF factions will hold as the party prepares for its elective congress in December.
Police today blocked ZANU-PF youth from protesting on the streets against alleged corruption and victimization of party members who are either officials or students at the Belvedere Technical Teachers College in Harare. Ivan Chifera has details.
The officer commanding Harare Central District, Chief Superintendent Norbert Saunyama, told the youth to shelve their protest until, in his words, the situation is calm in Harare. Although he did not specify what he meant, tensions have been rising in ZANU-PF's Harare province as factions jostle for positions ahead of the party's elective congress in December. Just this week, the police also blocked another protest by ZANU-PF youths targeting Harare South lawmaker Shadrick Mashayamombe, who is accused of opposing First Lady Grace Mugabe's rise to the helm of the party's Women's League. But today, the youth from ZANU-PF's Harare Central 1 district, covering the Belvedere area, ignored the police instructions and converged at the college, intending to march and present a petition to Parliament and the Higher and Tertiary Education head office in the city center. Anti-riot police dispersed them, saying their demonstration was illegal as it had not been sanctioned. One of the organizers of the failed demo, Richard Samunda, accused the Higher Education Permanent Secretary, Washington Bizo, of victimizing acting college principal, Patrick Chinoro. He claims Chinoro was removed from the college for fighting corruption.
The major reason why we demonstrate is because we want to protect the interests of our cadres. Once a ZANU-PF cadre is being victimized politically, we are not going to sit back and relax. That's destroying our party. Whether they are destroying from within or outside, we will not sit back and relax. The minister officials, namely Dr. Mbizo, Mr. Dewa, his subordinate, they send their lieutenants there telling them this and that. They want to remove him from the college because he has an ethnic corruption.
The youth said their demo was against ministry officials like Mbizo, whom they accused of promoting corruption. Samunda said Chinoro is a party cadre and should not be persecuted for fighting graft. Sources told Studio 7 a new substantive principal has been appointed to take over from Chinoro beginning next week when colleges open. Mbizo could not be reached for comment, while Chinoro said he was not authorized to speak to the press. Zimbabwe National Students Union President Gilbert Mutubuki slammed the ZANU-PF youth, saying they should stay away from colleges. He added the youth should have demonstrated against parastatal executives who are earning obscene salaries in what has been dubbed salary gate if they are serious about fighting corruption in the country. A recent report by the Controller and Auditor General showed that Belvedere Teachers College could have lost more than $500,000 between 2009 and 2012 through the issuance of fraudulent receipts and breach of procurement procedures. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Opposition National Constitutional Assembly spokesman Matok Chivasa was today detained for more than 5 hours at Harare Central Police Station. He was later released without charge. Chivasa was grilled by Assistant Police Commissioner Crispin Makedenge. NCA leader Lovemore Matuku told VOA that police wanted to know why the party had released a statement yesterday alleging that the break-in and theft that occurred at Chief Justice Godfrey Chidiawsiku's office in Harare on Monday was due to ZANU-PF factional fights. NCA, in the statement yesterday, said it had received reliable information alleging senior ZANU-PF members were behind the alleged break-in, where a computer and television set were stolen. Efforts to get a comment from Makedenge were futile, but Matuku confirmed the detention. ZANU-PF's warring factions may have agreed to smoke the peace pipe following a high-stakes Politburo meeting lasting 10 hours yesterday, but analysts are skeptical the truce will hold. The party is engaged in a brutal succession war, pitting two formations allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and Vice President Joyce Mjuru. The previously dormant but well-known tensions have lately exploded into a fireball that had been and seen officials trading character assassination tones and embarrassing recriminations to discredit each other. And yesterday, the two camps came face-to-face in a special Politburo session that spokesperson Rugare Gumbo says condemned the infighting and resolved the ruling party should remain united and move as a team. But given the gravity of the aspersions and the succession stakes, the odds of unity in ZANU-PF are non-existent, at least according to political analyst Briggs Bomba.
Basically, you have thoroughly entrenched factional fights within ZANU-PF, and there is no way, even in heaven, that a 10-hour meeting like the one that Mugabe held with his Politburo yesterday would wipe off the table the thoroughly vested interests on succession that are driving the factional fights in ZANU-PF. So we are far from seeing the end of factionalism in ZANU-PF, basically until a successor is clearly in place and you have a new order, a new post-order, post-Mugabe order in place.
What would it take, really, for this order to be put in place and be made very clear?
Well, basically, at the present moment, you have Mugabe himself proving to be the biggest obstacle to a clear succession plan within ZANU-PF. It's now abundantly clear that Mugabe's interest is to maintain power for the longest possible time, maybe even to his deathbed, and it pays him to be able to play off one faction against the other. It's pretty obvious. Some of the key names that you keep hearing within ZANU-PF, and I think the dividing lines are quite clear, you know, as you continue to hear around the Mujuru lines, the Mnangagwa lines. But Mugabe has very skillfully played one side against the other. And I think as long as he's able to play this role, he can even introduce, you know, a third force just to continue to cause confusion and to maintain his own unquestioned or his own total authority over ZANU-PF.
That was political analyst Briggs Bomba on the line from Harare with reporter Ntunga Milinkomo. Close to 2,000 people have died from Ebola, and the number is expected to rise. Nigeria, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone have been most affected, but health officials around the world are stressing the importance of prevention in countries not yet affected, like Zimbabwe. Studio 7's Ntimiake Makalele reports.
Despite warnings and efforts to contain Ebola, especially in the West African countries of Nigeria, Guinea, Sierra Leone and Liberia, the disease continues to claim lives. Inadequate funding notwithstanding, World Health Organization Director General Margaret Chan says misinformation is partly responsible for the continued spread.
We are seeing anywhere between 30, 40 to 50% of mortality. So it is understandable that people get nervous. And so we do need good communication through the media, through local leaders, to help people to understand, first and foremost, how to prevent the disease.
Dr. Chan said denial, discrimination and fear that Ebola means death are also extending the disease.
We need to also talk about 50% of the people who survive the diseases. So it is important not to send the wrong message saying that you're going to die getting Ebola. If you come forward, things can be done. And also, communities, they are being punished for getting the disease. So all these are factors making stigmatization, making outbreak control very difficult.
Speaking at a press conference hosted by the United Nations Foundation in Washington Wednesday, Dr. Chan, together with her colleague Dr. Keiji Fukuda and the United Nations specialist on Ebola, Dr. David Nabarro, said all efforts are being taken to control the disease, which they say could last close to 9 months. Countries like Zimbabwe, not directly affected by the virus, are also being urged to be on high alert. Dr. Fukuda applauded efforts by Zimbabwe's health minister, David Parira Nyatwa, and the government, who have urged citizens not to travel to affected countries and have facilities in place to respond to the needs of anyone found to have the disease.
For people to simply understand that, in fact, it is a realistic possibility that an infected traveler could come to your country is step number one. And so this is one of the things that I think as Zimbabwe is trying to make that point understood is really important.
While Dr. Parira Nyatwa has said Zimbabwe has taken all precautions necessary, Fukuda said WHO and all other international organizations will provide help to the countries when needed.
We have about 140 country offices that are located in countries. We have 6 regional offices that on a regional basis have that.
Senior UN System Coordinator for Ebola, Dr. David Nabarro, stressed the importance of cooperation between and among countries and maintaining hope, despite what seems to be an unstoppable disease that is expected to affect close to 20,000 people.
I have sought so far not to use language or style which encourages people to perceive that this is something that we cannot deal with. I want to be very clear to you, this is doable with the institutions and resources that we have. But the scale-up that is needed to actually achieve it in the time that is available before it really does get to very hard to control situation, the scale-up is needed of the order of 3 to 4 times what is currently in place.
Cost of treating Ebola has been pegged at $600 million. For Studio 7, this is Ndimyake Mwakalyelye in Washington.
Some economists say the government acted prematurely when it hiked surtax charges on imported basic commodities from 10% to 40% last month. Economist Masimba Kuchera, director of the Center for Disability and Development, says the basic commodities such as cooking oil and soap may soon disappear from most shelves as companies importing them stopped this week supplying the country. Commodities affected include cooking oil, margarine, soap and washing powder. Kuchera tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the hike in surtax charges may also lead to the smuggling of these commodities into the country, leading to price hikes.
When you look at the effect of increasing tax, it means that the money that importers will have to import goods with will have reduced as they give more money to government. But the effect is also as a result of the industry not being strong enough to be able to support and manufacture a sufficient quantity of those goods on the local market. So the critical two processes that are going along are that the government does not have probably an ability to fund industry for it to manufacture goods, and also the importers will not have capacity to pay the increased amount of tax.
Will this not lead to smuggling of these commodities?
Look, it's clear that smuggling has been taking place for a long time, and smuggling will probably increase. That will also lead most probably to shortages or an increase in prices. So demand will probably peak around November, December, when the festive season starts. And the effect of smuggling, of course, is that the government will lose some of that targeted revenue that it had targeted. And it is therefore important probably for government to align the increase in tax with a strategy to revive local industry so that you don't have a situation where there are artificial gaps caused by this increase without the support to weak industries at the moment. As you are aware, that surveys say that most industries are operating at below 40% capacity utilization.
Do you think that the government acted prematurely in hiking these surcharges before the local industry can stand on its own?
Yes, I think the government was under pressure from industry to act in this way. But it's also under pressure from the fact that they don't have the capital or the moral high-worthiness to be able to underwrite industry borrowings. So as a result of those two scenarios, government probably was forced to act most probably as a temporary measure.
That was economist Masimba Kuchera, director of the Center for Disability and Development, speaking on the line from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Opposition Movement for Democratic Change leader Morgan Tsvangirai has joined the chorus of some Zimbabweans questioning the benefits of President Robert Mugabe's recent trip to China. Details about the trip and the deals Harare says it clinched remain shrouded in secrecy, though the state-controlled media has been saying Harare signed, quote, mega deals with China. ZANU-PF has congratulated Mr. Mugabe for a successful trip, although the finer details that Zimbabwe wants to hear as they yearn for an improvement economy remain sketchy. Pressure is mounting on President Mugabe and his cabinet to divulge details about his trip to China. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, who accompanied Mr. Mugabe to China, was evasive in Parliament Wednesday as he refused to furnish the House with details of the trip. In our last part of the interview with Mr. Tsvangirai, the MDC leader tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Mr. Mugabe is misleading Zimbabweans about his trip.
There's nothing wrong in having bilateral relations with China, but there is everything wrong to try to raise people's hopes on a false assumption that China is going to rescue this country. There are so many imponderables regarding Chinese investment in this country. They actually live in Zimbabwe. Immediately after the election, $1 billion of Chinese revenue, U.S. dollars, was spirited out of the country. I recently read that there were projects signed. Those projects are not going to mature in a year or two or three. Those are long-term projects. And what we are looking is not long-term project. We are looking for immediate infusion of U.S. dollars, foreign direct investment, whether Chinese, American, Indian, whatever. That is not forthcoming, and that is what we need.
Now, let's turn to ZANU-PF. Do you want to comment on the factionalism in ZANU-PF and its impact
on the national economy? Well, I can only comment the absurdity of people fighting while this Rome is burning. The absurdity of ZANU-PF fighting amongst themselves when the country is on its knees and it's burning. Who doesn't know that even across the political divide, the national grievances cutter across political divide? And that is the crisis that ZANU-PF has to deal with. Not who gets to what power and what position. I think the fight for position in ZANU-PF is almost ridiculous level, especially if people are in a position of being our government, and the government that is supposed to run the affairs of the nation.
But your critics are also saying you are missing a golden opportunity to show leadership at this time because you are also focusing internally on your own Congress and also this split with MITI.
We are not the government. We are not the party government. We are preparing to be a government as an alternative to ZANU-PF. So our problem does not affect the national process. Our problem affects MDC. We don't have the burden of so-called national leadership in terms of the crisis we face. The crisis we face is one caused by ZANU. They have to take the leadership to resolve that crisis. We are the opposition, and I think to try to say that we are not taking advantage of the crisis in ZANU-PF, I think it's totally inappropriate. We also have to move to put our house in order, and that's what we need to plan for the next government.
That was MTCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up, workers feel the pinch as they go for months without pay. But first, a look at regional and international news. U.S. President Barack Obama says economic sanctions against Russia are working and Russia is paying a price for its invasion of Ukraine. Mr. Obama said in a speech this week that capital is fleeing, foreign investment is plummeting because investors know that today's Russia is a bad bet given its behavior.
NATO leaders have opened a high-stakes summit in Britain, confronted by the Islamic State advance in the Middle East and Russia's military intervention in Ukraine. Leaders from 28 countries in the U.S.-European military alliance met today at a golf resort in Wales, with the discussions aimed at combating the Islamic militants in Iraq and Syria and halting the fighting in eastern Ukraine between Kiev's forces and pro-Russian separatists.
And the European Central Bank has cut interest rates in a bid to boost a weak economic recovery. The ECB lowered its benchmark interest rate to 0.05% from a previous record low of 0.15%. The bank also cut its deposit rate, what bank pay the central bank for their deposit.
Things are getting harder by the day for the ordinary worker in Zimbabwe as prices of commodities continue to rise in the absence of improved salaries, if they come at all at the end of the month. Workers from different provinces, including Redcliffe in Kwekwe at the former Zisco Steel, tell Studio 7 that they are owed salaries by their companies, making life difficult for them and their families. National Railways of Zimbabwe workers yesterday said they will stage demonstrations over outstanding salaries. Stanbic Bank workers last week protested over poor working conditions and low salaries. Chitungwiza Council workers who recently protested over pay say they are yet to be paid. New Zimbabwe Steel Limited workers have gone for years without pay, surviving on minimal amounts and assistance over the years. For perspective on this issue, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to John Mufukari, the executive director of the Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe, and Benedict Moyo, a representative of the New Zimbabwe Steel Limited Workers Union. Moyo says workers in Zimbabwe are barely surviving.
Schools are opening right now and we don't know how we are going to send our children back to school. The service providers are on our backs. Households or houses have been closed due to failure to pay rent and water bills. And as we speak, those that have managed to squeeze something from their relatives that are in diaspora, water is closed right now. And that's more than 6 months. It's water closed, and obviously that's a recipe for diseases to grow. So really, it's difficult. It's a difficult situation that we find ourselves under.
Mr. Mfukare, what's your reaction as employers when you hear what Mr. Moyo is talking about in regards to what he's facing in his particular situation?
Zisco Steel is a very special case, special in the sense that the company hasn't operated for the past 4 years. And I think it actually illustrates the state of Zimbabwe labor law. How can you not have worked for 4 years and still expect to be paid? Where on earth is the employer going to be able to get money to pay you when you have not been producing for 4 years? It's not the employee's fault. I put the blame squarely on our labor laws. Because obviously, if you have got to a situation where you are not producing anymore, it is clear that both parties can no longer keep their side of the bargain. The worker cannot work anymore. The employer cannot pay anymore.
Mr. Moyo, your reaction to that?
I understand what you are saying, but it is not the correct procedure to Zisco. In Zisco, remember, this deal was crafted and agreed some 4 years ago. And from 4 years ago, we've always been promised within 2 months it's going to be running. And we're talking as recent, it's now a recent, already more than 10 months ago in November, whereby the Minister of Industry was saying before the end of the year, meaning before the end of 2013, this was going to be up and running. But that story has been running for the past 4 years. So it's not the labor laws, as they say. I think it is how things have been done, really.
Mr. Mfukare, besides the issue of the labor laws, the companies themselves are also facing financial constraints. Can you explain how exactly companies are dealing with issues that are outside of their employees?
If a company is operating but is not bringing in revenue, then you have a very serious problem. That now becomes a management problem. In this case, again, I don't blame management that much, because what is happening is you might have a good order book, you are giving orders, but you are unable to receive anything because of the liquidity crunch. So it is the liquidity crunch now which makes you fail to pay your workers, even though you have got enough money, enough orders, enough on your debtors to be able to pay them.
Mr. Moyo, as moving forward, what are your options? As you were saying earlier, that many people in Zisco Steel, but also throughout Zimbabwe, are dealing with issues of being unable to take care of their family duties and daily life duties in regards to money.
It's a big challenge, really. You know, we are surviving by the grace of the Lord, of God, really. The Lord smiles upon his subject in Zimbabwe, and we are beneficiaries of the Lord's grace. That's the only thing that I can say, because how we are surviving, it's unbelievable. And that's why you find diseases are just spreading easily in our community. Deaths are many in our community. And also stress and anxiety. Because when you don't know what's happening tomorrow, that becomes a big problem. If you know what's happening, it's better. You know, if you are told that this is what is happening, yes, you can make a plan. But when you are told that just stay here, keep on coming to work, keep on coming to work, and you don't know what's going to happen, that becomes a big problem.
Benedict Moyo, representative of the New Zimbabwe Steel Limited Workers Union in Kwekwe. You also heard the views of John Mfukare, executive director of the Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe. They spoke with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
As settlers continue to occupy land in Bulawayo and its surrounding areas, the Bulawayo City Council says it is still waiting for the police to carry out recent court orders granting the local authority permission to evict illegal settlers from some of its properties, which include tourist attraction Mazwi Natural Reserve. Police yesterday reportedly fought running battles with illegal settlers who have occupied Norwood Farm on the outskirts of Bulawayo. However, the leader of the invaders, Tariro Makovanyika, a ZANU-PF activist, reportedly denied they were facing evictions, saying police were simply warning them not to cut down trees. Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo tells Studio 7 the local authority is still maintaining security on his properties where the invaders were evicted to ensure they do not return.
Invasions are always negative. Like if you take Mazwi Nature Park, trying to preserve nature in its natural form. Now, when people come in and start cutting trees, they disturb the animals that are there. It erodes the value of the land. But as council, we have taken action, we have approached the court, so the people are being evicted.
We note that last week there were evictions in Westgate. Have they been very successful?
Well, we kept some personnel there, I mean, to ensure that the people don't come there. So we are policing the area.
So what about in other areas where you have not yet effected the evictions?
Well, we are waiting for when an eviction order is issued, it must be executed. It will be executed by this officer of the High Court. But he cannot do that alone, because you are talking of many people and there are emotions involved. So he needs also security. So the security must be provided for by Zimbabwe Republic Police.
That was Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo on the line from Bulawayo.
Star, unfortunately, time is not on our side, but before we go, for all the soccer lovers out there, there were two matches played today in the Premier League. Bantu Rovers 0, Capes United 0, Shabani 2, Wange 0. So I guess this works to the advantage of Dynamos, the boys in blue. Now we recap today's top stories.
Police block a ZANU-PF youth protest against corruption and alleged victimization of party members.
Pressure is mounting on President Robert Mugabe and his cabinet to release details and benefits from his recent trip to China.
And analysts are skeptical the truce agreed to between two warring ZANU-PF factions will hold as the party prepares for its elective congress in December.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira, and listeners, please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk. Today, Marvelous and PJ are talking about women and business.